Welcome to Ideas for the Future of Vermont, a podcast produced by GNAT TV and the Vermont Council on Rural Development.
Hello and welcome back to part 7 of a 10-part series GNAT TV and other community access centers across the Vermont Access Network are hosting in partnership with the Vermont Council on Rural Development, the Barry Times Argus, and Rutland Herald newspapers. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. This 10-part series is about the ideas for the future of Vermont and looks at what are some of the big questions that are facing the state as we emerge out of the pandemic and into whatever lies ahead. What are some of the big issues facing the state in the coming years, and how will we go about tackling them? Upcoming topics in our series will include such areas as regional coordination, investing in the working landscape, and civic engagement. So far, some of the topics we've discussed include broadband development, welcoming new Vermonters, climate change and its relationship to the state's economy, economic disparities within the state, and localizing food and energy. If you've missed one of them, or want to get caught up on some of the previous discussions we've had, you can visit the website futureofvermont.org/explore, and you can find not only the previous telecasts, but also the written opinion pieces that have been published in the Herald and the Times Argus, and also the podcast versions of some of our shows in case you'd just rather listen. Today, our topic is about building business and economic vitality in the state. Specifically, the 7th proposition reads, Vermont must strengthen business vitality by advancing entrepreneurship, investment, workforce, and rural innovation. With us today to discuss this point are John Copans, who's the program director of the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Monique Priestley is the founder and executive director of the Space on Main, a co-working and makerspace in Bradford, Vermont. Matt Dunn is the founder and executive director of the Center on Rural Innovation based in Heartland, Vermont. And Sam Hooper is the owner of the Vermont Glove Company, which is based up in Randolph, Vermont. So, welcome everyone. Great to have you all with us today.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be here.
And thank you all for making the time for this discussion as well. In a moment, I'd like to invite Matt and Monique and Sam to describe the work their organizations are doing with regard to entrepreneurship and rural innovation and workforce development and so forth. But first, John, I was wondering if you could perhaps get us started a little and summarize what this proposition involves and perhaps a background or an overview of how the Council on Rural Development developed these propositions.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Really appreciate you hosting these conversations and the whole team at GNAT and Monique, Matt, and Sam. It's really great to have you as part of this conversation today as well. You know, the Council on Rural Development is, we are a convener organization, a facilitator. We have hosted well over 100 conversations in communities or processes in communities around the state of Vermont. And in that work, what we see is an opportunity and a need to develop more of a statewide vision for our future. The question that we frame, and this is with a nod to the Vermont Community Foundation that helped frame up this question, is what do Vermonters need to do in the next 3 years to be successful over the next generation? And so what we've done over this spring and last fall and winter is really talk to Vermonters. We've engaged 700 Vermonters in interviews, whether in a group setting or one-on-one. We've well over 1,000 Vermonters have filled out surveys. We hosted recovery visits as part of COVID response statewide in all 14 counties. And so the 10 propositions that make up sort of what we are talking about and proposing really come from Vermonters, from that perspective, from our deep public engagement in communities around the state of Vermont. And the purpose of this conversation is really to sort of think specifically about this question of economic development, entrepreneurship. How do we grow that ecosystem of small and medium and big businesses and business success here in Vermont. And honestly, I think I'll be mostly on the sideline. I'm really looking forward to listening in as this team hashes about on the topic today. So thanks, Andrew. Really appreciate, again, you hosting this conversation for us.
Well, thank you, John. Now I guess we'll invite the rest of our panel here to tell us a little bit about their respective organizations. Matt Dunn, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about the Center on Rural Innovation. What is your mission and game plan?
Sure. So the Center on Rural Innovation is an action tank that's focused on building digital economy jobs in rural places. Nationally, the Great Recession caused a divergence in the economies of rural and urban places, driven largely by automation, globalization, and the decline of entrepreneurship in rural America that had been falling for the 30 years prior to the Great Recession. So without the farm team of new companies to come in when the recession hit, and with the types of jobs that were being created being ones that were being created in urban areas, mostly the products of automation, so robotics and computer software and the like, and those jobs that they were automating being removed in rural, you just had this massive divide. So that by even January of 2020, before COVID, not even half of rural counties in our country had gotten back to their pre-recession levels, whereas every urban place had gone far beyond. So what we believe is necessary to be a part of economic recovery is to have digital economy jobs, computer and automation and robotics jobs. And so because right now, rural America represents 15% of the nation's workforce, but only 5% of the digital economy jobs. So our mission is to get that 5% up to 15% so that all folks in America have the chance for the jobs that can create economic growth for them, but are also resilient in the face of automation moving forward. We do capacity building work. So we work with communities like Springfield and Randolph and others to help create accelerator programs and pathways for people who may be underemployed to get digital economy jobs. And we're doing that all across the country from Heartland, Vermont.
All right. Monique, you're next. Tell us a little bit about the space on Main. It's a co-working space up there in Bradford.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. So we ended up taking over what was in a kind of a closed department retail store that had been there since the 1950s. And our Main Street was feeling pretty dead a couple years ago, and just tried to come up with creative solutions on ways to basically work to support people who are trying to make it here in rural Vermont, but also to retain younger people who are, leaving the area because they don't feel like they have either like the community or the say like broadband resources to make it here. So we start off as a co-working kind of conference and event space. So we have community groups that come through. We've had things like Senate hearings or bands come through and do live music shows, to things like doing educational classes to kind of teach people how to engage in their municipal government, to things like we did on before COVID, right as COVID was starting, we were doing entrepreneurship panels of people, of small businesses and entrepreneurs who had just started businesses or had successful businesses in the area, kind of teaching people, you know, how they made it, the failures they had seen, and what other people could do to start their own ventures. We ran two business accelerators with, I think we had 21 entrepreneurs through them. And that's kind of our next, what we're working on now is increasing the accelerator kind of portion, and serving as a connector between like local financial institutions, business technical, assistance, businesses, and things like chambers of commerce and things to support people who want to start businesses. I also am just going to give a plug for the other hat that I wear, so which is for the Center for Women in Enterprise, which is basically provides technical assistance to women entrepreneurs in the state of Vermont and throughout New England, actually.
All right, great. And Sam, tell us a little bit about the Vermont Glove Company.
Yeah, so we're Vermont Glove, been here in Randolph since 1920. You can see behind me on the wall, there's some of the old gloves that we made back then, silk dress riding gloves. European market had a pretty good stronghold on that. We quickly transitioned to making utility gloves for the trade sector during the Electrify America FDR program. And we've been making gloves for power line workers ever since. And I took over ownership of the business about 3 years ago, formerly known as Green Mountain Glove. And we've been leveraging our position in the trade sector to be a consumer-facing brand with meaningful values, creating good-paying jobs here in Randolph, and trying to, you know, have a positive impact on our community and use our business as a platform to speak out against the things we believe in. And been doing pretty well so far. So if you want to check out our gloves, Green Mountain or VermontGlove.com, and that'll be my plug for the day.
All right. Well, I will have to check them out. Got a lot of yard work to do. Anyway, I thought perhaps we could start by kind of looking at this proposition and unpacking it a little bit here. Starts off talking about entrepreneurship. And I guess I was just wondering if I could ask each of you to, you know, sort of talk a little bit about what you think is involved in the notion of entrepreneurship. Are there some certain keys or certain critical elements that that lead to successful entrepreneurial activity? Is there some sort of secret sauce that's out there that, you know, can be replicated across different kinds of businesses or in different locations? And Matt, if you don't mind, I'll start off with you again, if I may, and just have you tell us what you think, or what comes to mind when you think about entrepreneurial activity.
Sure. So Monique and I actually have something in common. We help entrepreneurs, but we also started our own enterprises. And I think we come to this with both of those views, which is interesting. And Sam reinvented a company, which is sometimes harder than starting something from scratch. And they're all sort of notions of that. Sense. I mean, an entrepreneur has to be, you know, incredibly focused on solving some kind of problem, right? There is, at the end of the day, it may be a market problem. It may be something that people really want, but isn't available in a local market. And then to be able to figure out all of the pieces that have to come around to be able to make that happen. And while we'd like to think that it all works the way that they tell you it does in business school, where it happens in the exact order that you plan and when things want to happen, life just isn't like that. And in fact, you have to be really nimble and have a very open aperture to know, all right, here is the opportunity over here. I know that was supposed to be step six, but if we can get that step six going now, then we can do 3 through 5, because otherwise it's not going to happen. And your job as an entrepreneur is to really set that focus and then bring in other collaborators to help you get to that place, whether they're working for you or they're working alongside you, they're funding you to be able to go after it. You do have to be, and we were joking before the show, a little bit crazy, right? You do have to believe in your heart that this vision can come to a reality, despite a lot of evidence to the contrary, that you are... many times told over and over again, that seems like a really hard thing to pull off. And you've got to be okay with going and asking, you know, for a new customer or for a new funder or something like that, and be told no, and not have that be the end of either that conversation or the 50 others that you have down the line. So we see that with our, you know, the folks who are being accelerated through our network of ecosystem builders, and what I think is interesting, and is in many places that have sort of that have not had that entrepreneurial spirit for a while for a wide variety of reasons, it's sometimes hard to make them feel comfortable with that risk. to feel comfortable with knowing, all right, this may not work out the way that I'm playing, but I'm going to take that leap and I'm going to run at it. And when that has been lost from a culture, it's hard to get it back, because it's much easier when you see other people making that leap to feel like you're comfortable making that leap as well. And so that's the final thing that I'll flag, is how important it is to do full systems change if you're trying to create more entrepreneurship. You need to be doing what Monique's doing, which is bringing entrepreneurs who have gone and done that crazy thing and been successful to tell their story, and not to gloss it all over, to have folks like Sam, who's getting out there with his company and sharing the values that they're bringing as a company, to say, just because you are running an enterprise doesn't mean you have to abandon your values. In fact, it can lift up the values that you and the folks that work for you are wanting to bring out there. It's a very hard thing to articulate, but it just is so important that you work on that culture of risk-taking, that sense that you can go out there and try it, and that grit, which I think we have in Vermont naturally, to just keep on after it until you figure out a way to make it work and fit.
Okay. Well, before I move on, Monique, Sam, did you wish to comment in any way on that as well, or build upon anything that Matt said?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, so yes to everything I said, absolutely. And then just a few other just things like, access to capital, which I think is something that we could really work on here in Vermont and everywhere. But that's definitely something. So if somebody has an idea, giving them the resources and the money to actually be able to make that come to life, I think is a big thing that we all need to work on. and then just also providing the spaces, like Matt was talking about ecosystems for the entrepreneurship. So providing spaces the Black River Innovation Campus and Vermont Center for Emerging Technologies and the Space on Main, and just any number of organizations that are working to bring a number of people together, like Matt said, so people can see, you know, what the other people are going through. So they have people who they can bounce, like, I'm really struggling with this thing, or I just had my first sale, or, you know, celebrate successes. But also be able to talk through, the hard things, the wall that they keep banging their head over against over and over and over again, and just providing some kind of support system for people and technical assistance. I think we have a lot of technical assistance providers, Center for Women in Enterprise, the Small Business Development Centers, Mercy Connections, all kinds of technical assistance. But I think there's often a gap between those technical assistance providers. They're often centered in kind of more populated areas, or they're underfunded or they're understaffed. So they might have like one person or two people who are supposed to be handling the whole state of Vermont or their whole county. And I think in a lot of ways we have an opportunity to expand, to network between those organizations better, so that we're actually able to reach the people who are at the end of the dirt road in the middle of nowhere, who actually has a brilliant idea, working in their shop or the garage or something.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And just a couple things, Matt, you nailed a couple things there with grit for sure. I think that's the number one most important thing for a successful entrepreneur. Definitely agree with access to capital, but like we were talking about just a minute ago with Matt saying, figuring out solving a problem or bringing something to market that is going to create progress or has opportunity and value. If you have a good idea and you have a well thought out business plan, access to capital shouldn't discourage you, and I agree with Monique that we need to make it more accessible, but you're going to be told no a million times, and you're going to have the grit to, pick yourself up. And the culture of entrepreneurship is important to make it seem as though if you do fail, you're going to be, it's okay to fail once, you're going to get back up, you're going to try again, And I think that the idea of failure is really daunting for young entrepreneurs. And of course, you know, I've been very privileged in my life, having grown up in an entrepreneurial family and seeing what that looks like. And so I have the ability to think big and accept risk and take on debt. And because I'm not afraid of those things, but I agree, fostering a culture where it's okay to, you know, take these risks. But the main thing, I guess, is like, be diligent about doing the things that aren't fun to do. You know, you have to be a jack of many trades, and you may not be the best at all of them. And I think one reason, you know, 4 out of 5 small businesses fail is because they get so focused on doing the things that they love, but not focused on doing the things that really need to get done. And sometimes that's cash planning. And sometimes that's spending hours in front of a spreadsheet. Sometimes that's being the boots on the ground, sweeping the floor, you know? So just grit is definitely the number one thing I think you need to have.
All right. I guess I was wondering, is there something in particular that strikes you that the state of Vermont could do to encourage more entrepreneurial activity around the state? I mean, is it a tax thing or regulations that, you know, when you think about, gee, you know, it'd be great if more people took the initiative to kind of start their own business or follow up an idea or a dream, but, you know, then it's going to take years before they see any positive results. I mean, does anything in particular come to mind, or is the state's occasional reputation as being like sort of less than as pro-business as it could be not justified?
Yeah, this one gets me going. I love this concept that Vermont is unfriendly to business. I fully disagree. You know, you hear some business owners threaten to want to go to New Hampshire. I'm like, okay, great, go. If you want to stop trading on the Vermont cachet, if you want to stop trading on the Vermont name, go to New Hampshire. You want to stop paying those taxes? You're going to pay them in property taxes. No taxation program ever put a business out in Vermont or in any state, for example, for that matter. If you're letting that be the demise of your business, then there's a million and one other things that need to be corrected first. So I think there are things that Vermont can do on the state level to inspire and open up more doors, but by no means is the business community being choked out by the state of Vermont in terms of public policy.
Matt, Monique, would you care to jump in on that one?
Look, Sam said that in plainer English than I ever would, but I'm on the same place, and particularly for entrepreneurship, right? Entrepreneurs are not worried about their marginal tax rate. They're worried about getting their idea to market or getting customers to be able to come into their space. They are focused really like a laser on getting that done. And, you know, maybe when it's hugely successful and everything else, they start to look at those kinds of things. But, it, you know, that's not, if we're trying to actually build from the ground up new companies that have a connection to Vermont to begin with, rather than what, you know, has been traditional economic development, which is going, we call it whale hunting, you know, going out and trying to harpoon some big corporation to show up with a corporate campus, which, by the way, isn't shown to be a great use of dollars, because if they were going to be willing to, you know, take the lowest bidder before, they'll take the lowest bidder later. So there is so much more power in actually building up the kinds of companies that can be successful, that are rooted here, feeling okay if they have an exit, right? You know, exits happen. That's fine. That's actually successful, as long as you're creating the avenues for people to then, who are, you know, Vermonters who started it, to then reinvest and to be a part of that virtuous that virtuous capital cycle that can happen. It's what Silicon Valley is, you know, was really known for. And frankly, we've seen it in Vermont, you know, where people who have started businesses, you know, dealer.com being an example of it. The founders of that went and took that money and started investing in some of the only early stage tech capital that was going out there, which was, you know, exciting to see. So anyway, there's, I think the things that I think the state of Vermont can do is really follow the lead of the Vermont Community Foundation and the work that, you know, Dave Bradbury and Monique have been pioneering, which is to think about how do you create those cultural shifts that we talked about before, but also nodes. You know, places and spaces where people can come together to see someone else who's trying it, who can commiserate, who can share ideas, who can bring folks with capacity who want to invest in Vermont over to actually understanding where there are companies that they can invest in and feel great about what they're investing in, and can actually bring their own expertise to come along with that investment. So, you know, the kinds of things that you know, Dan Smith and his team have been investing in recently has been helping to support those vessels, the things like the Space on Main, you know, VSET, BRIC, other kinds of entities being able to provide higher risk loans that a bank wouldn't provide to either a startup or to an enterprise that's trying to redevelop a downtown space to make that happen. And something that I don't think a lot of people know about is that the Vermont Community Foundation is leading the nation in actually taking some of their capital, some of their endowment money, and actually investing in Vermont companies. Because they said, if we're not doing that side of the ledger, we're not going to have the same impact. You have places like Mamava that have done incredibly well creating jobs both in Burlington and in Springfield, Vermont. And I think the way that the state could get involved in that is by using resources like the significant amount of ARPA money that has come down from the feds to invest in those kinds of long-term capacity supporting entities to make sure that the jobs aren't just being created in Burlington and Chittenden County and a little bit of Waterbury and Montpelier, but that it's actually distributed across the state so that we can have a healthy distributed economy all the way across. Final thing is that, the state a number of years ago provided some subsidy and backstops to encourage higher risk capital, different from VITA, but higher risk capital for a seed fund in the state. And that really was valuable and could do a lot more. That's happening in other states where they're not the only source of capital that's coming in, but they're able to create a piece of it that is comfortable with knowing that, you know, only 1 out of 10 of those companies are going to become a scalable company. And that's okay. And we can actually come into the investor community, provide some state benefit for folks putting that kind of money into a pool that's a higher risk pool to be able to allow for Sam Hooper to pivot an older company or the companies that are coming through Monique's space to be able to have access to that first $50,000, that first $75,000 that makes such a difference in their ability to get from here to there.
And Monique, before we move on to our next point, anything you wanted to add to what the state might do or could help in some way to promote and scale up more entrepreneurial activity around the state?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to throw salt on a wound a little bit for the state of Vermont, but as far as just speaking to a lack of diversity and in for both like women support for women and BIPOC owners, business owners, and access to capital. So in the United States in 2016, less than 2% of venture capital went to women owned businesses and 1% went to African American and Latino businesses. And that's the United States, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is very similar in Vermont, if not kind of worse in Vermont. I just know for the Center for Women in Enterprise, we've just seen like women are less likely to take on loans and debt. They're also less likely to apply for money, thinking that there's somebody else out there that needs it more. And I think just encouraging people to actually take advantage of the resources that are there by supporting them, and also just being more strategic with the different, like Matt was saying, different ways that we can fund businesses rather than just the traditional bank loans, which often also comes with some kind of archaic policies that aren't equitable for people, and thinking through like micro lending, or like Matt was talking about the seed funding, and just being a little bit more flexible with how people get access to that money.
What Monique didn't mention was that women entrepreneurs are also much more successful than male entrepreneurs. Like, all the data shows that women entrepreneurs are more successful. So it's particularly galling that the kind of statistics that Monique talks about are the current situation. So,
well, let's turn next to the next part of this proposition about workforce development. It's a subject we touched upon a couple of times in some of the previous shows one way or another. And I guess I just sort of ask you all, what are the challenges and opportunities here? I mean, this has been a subject that's been discussed at great length over the past few years. You know, concerns about if we're training the right mix of workers for the future, you know, population growth. Are there going to be enough workers to take care of all the jobs that will be available? So I guess I'll just go around the room again, if I may. And perhaps, Monique, I'll start with you on this one. What do you see as the workforce challenges and opportunities that are facing the state in the coming years?
Yeah, so as far as the, we see about 3,500 high school grads and 4,500 college grads who are retained by the state each year. So it's about just over almost 19,000 people. Our demand is 19,000 people. So we have a gap of about 10,000 people per year as far as jobs. And so we're not doing things, I think, in a lot of ways that we could be doing at an early age, which even when we do studies, I just recently did a strategic plan for our like local school district, and things like getting kids interested in set technical and trade opportunities, as well as financial literacy in schools, was just at the super top of everybody's priority, which is not something that's discussed often, especially in like our small area. But I think getting kids into the mindset of what is entrepreneurship, and how does a business even get created? What are skills that you can do that you don't have to go to a four-year college for? Things like that, that I think in a lot of ways, if we just kind of focused on skill developments, and not saying the four-year degree isn't valuable, because it is. I went through a master's myself, and I definitely appreciate that. But I think that we need to just be the stigma around technical and trade is something that we really have to work on and encourage people, because people can jump right out of high school, get be an apprentice with an electrician or something, and make really decent money like right off the bat, and not take on a bunch of debt and have to feel like they have to leave the state of Vermont in order to make a living and buy a house and support their family.
And Sam, I imagine this must be a question you think about a lot, finding the right workers for your business. Is that a problem, or is it, you know, kind of, you know, an overrated problem?
It's 100% our Achilles heel. It's the thing that will prevent us from scalability. We're not having a sales and marketing issue. We're having a manufacturing capacity issue. And that, you know, when I did my introduction, I forgot to mention that we make every product that we sell right here in our factory. We cut and hand sew every unit. And sewing a leather glove is about the most intricate and challenging item to sew in the garment and textile industry. So for us to be doing that here requires an immense amount of training, an immense amount of skill. So it may take me 3 months to train a new sewer. So you're tying up a lot of working capital, and that's, you know, that's why cash comes at a serious premium in our business. That's why we defer every payment that we can to be paid at a later date. We save as much working capital as possible. So that's super important to us. Now, this is a place where I think the state of Vermont can play a huge role in terms of workforce development, in terms of training schools. There's about 25 growing sewing operations or textile operations in Vermont. Whether most people don't realize that, but you know, you can rattle them off. Darn Tough is you know, the big player in the space. A little bit more automation in their industry than in mine, but is still an extremely important sector to our economy here in Vermont. And historically speaking, was a massive part of our workforce. So for us to abandon it over the last few decades is kind has been somewhat frustrating for me. And so I'm trying to get it back on the playing field by way of VMAC or Vermont Manufacturing Extension Center, along with Chamber of Commerce and the state of Vermont. And I agreed 100% with Monique about we need to invigorate our tech programs again. We need to destigmatize those. You know, we were talking about 10,000 trade jobs in not so far out here. I mean, I'm trying to up my electrical service right now just so I can bring in a new piece of equipment, but I can't up my electrical service because my electrician can't find another apprentice. So, it is a real growing pain. And, you know, in terms of people saying you're crazy for taking over Green Mountain Glove and thinking you're going to grow that business, how are you going to find the labor? And, you know, that's where my grit and a little bit of insanity comes in for me to want to do it. But, you know, another place is increasing the minimum wage in Vermont is a big thing. You know, a lot of other business owners make the argument that if the company down the street from us is paying 15 or the minimum wage is that at the gas station, then I got to pay X amount more. It's like, well, you're going to have to pay X amount more just to retain your employees in general. I mean, this stuff is happening. Like, we're talking about an economy that's grown like this since 1980, and wages haven't kept up with it. The cost of living in Vermont is, you know, subsistence is around $30,000 a year. If you're not paying $15 an hour, your employee can't live here. So how long do you really plan on keeping them? So, you know, we start employees at 15 here. Yes, if the state, you know, we're a big believer, we need more people in the state of Vermont. So one good way to do that, to attract young people to come back to the state of Vermont, is make it clear and cut, you know, as easy as they can see from afar out, they can say, I can move to Vermont and whatever job I get, I can pay to cover my cost of living. Right now, they can't say that, so they don't come. I'll let Matt take it from there.
All right.
Actually, could I jump in?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
Cool. Yeah. So, just going off what Sam said, just to throw a number at it, because the Vermont Futures Project just did a series of focus groups with young professionals around the state of Vermont. And what they came up with a number for a cost of living for a family of three in Vermont is $5,555 a month. And people make $5,480 per month, leaving them $75 to cover like healthcare, their phone, their internet bill, which is going to be required for anybody living here. It doesn't make sense. Like Sam said, as far as being able to actually afford living here right now, it's not.
All right, Matt, over to you.
Well, so I would want to be on this group panel any day now, because I just think it's a group of folks who are coming at this from slightly different places, but just coalescing around a concept. We do need more people in the state. You know, some of us have been saying that for a while, and we can. A lot of it's about making sure that there is investment in downtowns and in the kinds of redevelopment that doesn't have to compromise the magnificence of Vermont. But people are super fired up to come back if they knew they had a job that could pay and be aspirational, as Sam said, and that they could live in one of our cool downtowns, right? Have a sweet apartment in downtown Randolph or downtown Springfield. And so in some ways, the housing discussion in the state right now is all about addressing the low-income housing and homelessness, and it has to happen. But that doesn't mean we can't, you know, chew gum and walk at the same time and provide the resources to invest in our downtown for folks who are, you know, early professionals or coming back or whatever, to be a part of a growing state, and not just trying to shoehorn more people into Burlington, right? To actually do it across the state. There's so much capacity to create that vibrancy. And it also will allow for people to feel a little bit less risky in taking on perhaps that entrepreneurial thing. I'm going to talk about two things real quick. One is student debt is a brutal impediment for people being entrepreneurs. right? If you've got student debt hanging over your head, you are going to have, a lot harder time to go and start something on your own, right? That's just, that's the bottom line. So whatever we can do to reduce student debt in our state will allow more Vermonters to choose to, you know, whether they went to school in Vermont or they went out but want to come back, to be able to unlock their full creative potential to go and start something and do something or join a company that may or may not work out. But if you got the student debt, it's going to make it tough. The other thing I want to just talk about is the different kind of entrepreneurs that are out there. We're investing in a company that's not in Vermont, but it's we have a seed fund at the Center on Rural Innovation to invest in early stage companies that are technology based and can scale, you know, nationally or globally. And this one company called Shift Auto was someone who, you know, trained as a mechanic and worked in the auto repair business for a while, and said the whole system for scheduling someone to get their car fixed is dumb. It is the stupidest thing he's ever seen, and partnered up with a technologist, and they built a platform to solve it for their one, you know, garage operation. And they said, wait a minute, they could all probably use this, and maybe that's an interesting idea. And they've turned that into a company to go and take the pain and suffering out of scheduling and figuring out your ride and everything else. And there's a lot of upside to touching customers at that early stage when you're making it easier for them. So the pathway for entrepreneurs can come from all kinds of places. It doesn't have to be a fancy degree that gets you there, even in something that's technology based. It's absolutely true for people who can be their own boss and run a small company and do very well in the trades. But for some folks in those trades, that can also translate into something in the technology realm and solve it a lot better than someone who's just thinking about it theoretically because they've gone and done it. And I just want to flag that as so. People who are thinking about entrepreneurship, even technology entrepreneurship, know that that's an option. Final thing, Andrew, I'll just say is that for everyone going into the workforce, it doesn't matter where they're working, having some level of knowledge of computer science and technology is really critical. That doesn't mean everyone's going to go off and be a software designer or anything else. But as systems get more automated, whether it's on the shop floor or it's the folks at DesignBook who are creating, you know, new kinds of aircraft that can in Burlington that can take off vertically and then fly to Burlington, knowing that those basics of technology and coding, so you know what's happening inside. It's just, you know, when my dad insisted that I learn how an engine worked, right? It wasn't because he had any faith that I could become a mechanic, and that's true. You don't want me fixing any of your cars, but just having that general understanding of how that works helped in all kinds of other things. And it's the basics now. And the state of Vermont can do a lot more to make sure that that's, in every curriculum that every child is getting.
All right. Well, while
if I could just chime in quick to dovetail something, you know, I think the housing piece that Matt brought up is really fundamental, and it's so much been sort of exacerbated by some of the dynamics we've seen in the pandemic. And it's just, I just wanted to sort of accent that because it's something we're hearing. I think most people think that's more of a sort of Vermont urban problem, but it's an everywhere problem right now. We're hearing from folks in the kingdom, recruiting people, getting people ready to take jobs in good middle-class sort of positions. And they just cannot accept the job because they cannot find the habitable, comfortable housing at an affordable price for them. And so just want to sort of highlight, and the irony of that is that that's going to be a workforce issue as well, because we need to build a bunch of new housing. And boy, we need those people with the skills who can do that work as well. We're ready to make some investments there, but boy, we really need those folks coming out of the trades and able to do that kind of work.
Put a point on John, we're now 40 people in our organization. So it's a good size organization. I have three people trying to move to Vermont. And can't find a house. I mean, it is now, we've all wanted everyone to discover Vermont and be excited about coming up, but we've got to keep up with it on the housing side so that we can welcome people who are more diverse than we have been traditionally, welcome people who want to be a part of, you know, what we've made so special. But we can't just sit back and hope it'll happen.
I can second that. We're a team of 11 and we've already invested in employee housing.
Child care is another one that seems to come up a lot as well. Well, we could bat around this one for, I'm sure, a while long, but in the time we have left, I just wanted to kind of move on to kind of the last part of this proposition look at business innovation in rural areas. Now, I realize most of Vermont probably qualifies as being rural, except for few parts of Chittenden County or whatever. But I guess, do any of you think that there's any special difficulty or magic or way to go about bringing business innovation to the rural parts of the state? And Matt, I know this is a subject you've thought about greatly, the digital aspect of bringing digital jobs to small towns and villages, in various parts of the state. I just wondered, have you developed any thoughts about, you know, how the approach should be to bring more development to the smaller communities in the state?
Well, I think the big, and this may sound strange, we do a lot of programming. We've got the seed fund and all that. At the end of the day, I feel like so much of it is narrative. So much of both the national narrative and sometimes in some of our smaller towns, you're like, oh, well, that sounds like a Burlington thing, or that sounds like a, you know, Boston thing, Matt, when you're talking about a health tech company starting up. Well, it's not at all. And this has not been traditional. I mean, Vermont has been an entrepreneurship and an innovation state for a long time. You know, some of the first engines in the country that were invented in Vermont. And, you know, it was sometimes people who were on the farm who just had to, you know, fix stuff. And then they were like, huh, that worked a lot better. Maybe we can turn it into a washing machine or whatever else. But that narrative shift is just so important to know that you don't have to move to Burlington or to Kendall Square, Massachusetts, to unlock this idea and be able to be successful with it. And in places like Springfield, that was the heart of innovation, right? It was it was on Hitler's bomb list because the, you know, intellectual property coming out of the machine tool there was so important that it was seen as a threat to the Axis. So we've got, we've just got to get back to those roots where we know that every corner of Vermont has people who are ready to unlock that potential. And, you know, that's what Monique does every day, is trying to shift that narrative. Sam's doing it by like creating a business that's going to compete in the global marketplace. But I just think that's such an important piece to show that it is possible. It is here. And then create the structures to unlock it.
All right, Monique, would you like to build on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with Matt. I think it's time that we stop talking about all the things that we're lacking and we're not doing, the things that we could do if we spent some time on them, like broadband and housing and childcare and all that kind of stuff. And I think going back to the very first thing that we were saying, Vermonters just kind of inherently have an aspect of an amount of grit to them, and they're innovative because they have to be, because in order to make it here. So I think just kind of embracing that. Yeah, absolutely agree.
And Sam, any particular special challenges to bringing economic activity to rural parts of our state?
I think rural parts of the state are in a great position right now to springload off of this pandemic. People want to live in the country, and as long as they have the access to be able to continue to execute their career or whatever it may be, then we can enable that to happen. A couple big things to focus on are public education, and just continuing to invest in our teacher workforce, childcare, universal childcare. For, you know, we offer flexible scheduling in our business because it's one way we can have a couple of our key employees who have young children at home work with us. So, you know, there's those handful, and, you know, broadband, that's coming. Like, we got to make that happen. That's the reason, you know, big government matters. You know, if there wasn't FDR's program for Electrify America, if there wasn't this broadband bill to bring bring high-speed internet to that last dirt road, you just wouldn't have these things. So those are important pieces of the puzzle. And then there's the recreation piece. We're in a really good position to leverage Vermont's landscape in a responsible way, not in a degraded way, but in a responsible way to leverage the assets that we have all around us, especially in a changing agricultural market. So I'm excited for Vermont. And we got a lot of doers here.
To add on to Sam, I also think one thing that didn't come up this whole time was the creative economy. And I think Vermonters, we have a much higher percentage. We're almost 10% of our economy is actually from the creative network. And I think that just once we, I think a lot of us know that and value it. But I think if we can do as much as we can to support artists, especially since they're usually the ones like in the middle of the backwoods, off on their own, like doing their thing in their studio, trying to get those people engaged in the community and engaged with other with entrepreneurs in order to come up with creative solutions.
So we have time for one last question here. I'm going to sort of try and hold each of you to about a minute or so for your answers, because I want to get everyone an equal time here. But I guess I couldn't help but wonder, as I was listening to what you all talk, what you saw as the effect of the pandemic on all of this stuff as we go forward into 2021 and 22 and so forth. Are there any major like lessons learned that you're taking away from the experience we've all been through over the past 13 or 14 months and saying, well, going forward, this has to be different in order to build more rural innovation or more workforce development? I mean, supply chains would be one thing that would come to my mind, but each of you probably have a different slant on that. So Monique, I'll let you start with this one, since my laptop's camera is right on you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I think for me, it's been right when the pandemic started to happen, Vermont Council Rural Development stood up this effort to basically support communities and community leaders who are trying to like figure out what to do, what emergency systems were needed, how to get food to people, you know, how to support people in their homes. And I think that's just like Sam was saying, to a certain extent, like big government is needed. And I think in a lot of ways, this year showed me that there are lots of people who don't feel like they can get engaged politically and even in municipal governments. But that relationship like has to exist in order for us to actually be able to do things like housing and childcare and broadband. And I think in ways that as much as we can kind of create connections for just the average person to feel like they actually have some agency over the town that they live in, whether they're somebody who's been here for seven generations or they're somebody who just barely moved here and they want to get involved and they want to, you know, they have a passion for their town actually thriving. I think that we just need to do a better job actually feeling like everybody's part of a bigger thing in order to move Vermont forward.
All right, Sam, we'll go to you next.
Yeah, sure. So I'm glad you brought up the supply chain piece, you know, investing in a more secure supply chain and not being so dependent on other places in the world. It would be very, very strategic, you know, just in hindsight with this pandemic. With that said, vertically integrated manufacturing and businesses for your employees, and as well as, you know, being able to make a pivot, like state of Vermont needed a lot of face masks about this time last year. So we re-dyed and tooled and we made 56,000 face masks. So that's the power of vertically integrated businesses. And then the last thing, I guess, is community really matters. The people who create our communities definitely make life a lot better for everybody. So, you know, just kind of making sure we don't take that for granted, I think, in the future is important.
And Matt, I guess you get the last word on this one.
Yeah, well, you know, if nothing else, the pandemic showed us that broadband's important. right? It's not just a luxury. It's, you know, as Sam was referencing, it's the, you know, electricity of our time. And hopefully the momentum that's come with that will allow us to solve this and not just solve it for the short term with short term fixes, but with long term fiber to the home fixes across the whole state. The other part is that, you know, I share Sam's optimism, right? There is a new view about where people can work and where people can start companies that solve big problems. And that, I don't know how long that's going to last. It's here right now, where investors and people who are looking to move their job someplace or hire someplace, someone someplace else, are actually thinking about it differently. They're not, you know, caught in everyone's got to be in, you know, 25 zip codes, right, in order to be investable or to be hireable. And so we have a window of opportunity to really seize that and to say yes. And we have companies that are trying to get started, and we have people who want to be here, and or people who are here who are talented, who can solve problems and work with teams collaboratively across the board. You've got to have that broadband infrastructure for that to become real. But because Vermont was actually ahead of the curve in doing that in really creative kinds of ways, we're better positioned. We're also better positioned to use the, you know, the ARPA money to actually solve this problem. But we've just got to go and do it and be really, really in some ways loud about it. But we are here. We're ready to be at the front edge. The pandemic has been awful on a variety of levels, and the people who've been on the front lines, you know, thank God and hats off. And back to Sam's comment about community, because those are the folks who got us through the bad part of it. But the positive sides are real, particularly for a state like Vermont. It's just up to us now to seize that moment.
All right. Well, boy, we could talk for another hour about this. I got a funny feeling, but just about out of time. But we do have time, John Cobans, for you to tell us a little bit about the summit meeting that the Vermont Council on Rural Development has planned for, I believe it's May 26th and 27th. What's going to be going on?
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. And also just want to quickly thank Monique and Matt and Sam for this this awesome conversation. You know, the cool thing about working at the Council on Rural Development is, on one hand, we have the audacity to convene a summit called the Summit on the Future of Vermont, right? A really big title to this. But I think we also understand and have the wisdom that it is Vermonters that have the answer to that question about what the future of Vermont holds. And so our mission is to really build that crowd, those participants for this summit. It's May 26th and May 27th. Futureofvermont.org is a place to go to learn about this Vermont proposition and the summit. No cost to participate, or you're welcome to make a contribution as well. You know, this conversation to me highlights so well, like, the ecosystem of, you know, you can't talk about entrepreneurship without talking about childcare, without talking about housing, without talking about workforce. It all connects. And we're really looking forward to this conversation at the end of the month as we think more with Vermonters about what are the action steps to realize this vision for our state.
So registration is open for the summit. They can go to that website
That's right. Registration's open now. You got it.
All right. Well, thank you, John. And thanks to all of the rest of our panelists as well. Monique Priestley, Sam Cooper, and Matt Dunn. Really appreciate all of you making the time today for this conversation on this seventh proposition. And next week, we'll be talking about the eighth proposition, which is that Vermont must reform regional coordination and governance and advance efficiency and foresight in state planning. That sounds like that should be interesting. We'll certainly look forward to that one. Anyway, thanks again to everyone. Thanks to all of you who've been watching. I hope you found the program interesting, and we'll see you again next week. Meanwhile, have a great day.
You have been listening to Ideas for the Future of Vermont, a podcast produced by GNAT TV and the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Thank you for listening local.